Joint Committee on Ways and Means Natural Resources Subcommittee. This day, Tuesday, March 15th, 2005, we're going to hear today, and one day only, for a one-day engagement, the State Marine Board. And Director Paul Donheffner, would you come forward, please? And Christine? Actually, it's Lisa, isn't it?
That's what I thought.
Yeah. Let's see. Yeah. Don't look like a Christina today.
Cardboard analyst day.
Okay. Welcome, Mr. Director. Why don't you go ahead and get started with your presentation.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Paul Donheffner, Director of the Marine Board, and if I may, I'd like to use the flip charts that I've brought along here today to walk you through our agency presentation. I'd like to start off with just a little high-level overview of our agency. Our mission statement, we're dedicated to safety, education, and public access in a mechanical environment. A few fast facts about the agency. We've been around since 1959. We have a 5-member board located here in Salem. We have 39 full-time employees. We serve over 190,000 direct customers. These are people with motorboats and sailboats 12 feet and over. There are another 500,000 non-registered, non-motorized boats also playing on the waters of the state. Boating is popular here, although we rank 26th in total boat count nationwide, and we're 28th in population, so you can see that relative to the rest of the country, boating is a little more popular here than elsewhere, and there are nearly 60 registered boats for every 1,000 persons. Important highlight of our budget, there's no general fund. We're entirely based on other funds and federal funds. Quick peek at our organization chart. I apologize if I'm not really seeing it back there. It's a fairly flat organization as agencies go. Under the board, we have the Office of Director with 3 people, and then our various sections, registration and business services, which, along with education, includes our administrative budget, and then our law enforcement and our facilities. And what I'd like to do is then discuss briefly the types of things that we do within our program areas.
Paul, could you do me a favor, and could you move a little closer to the microphone? We're having difficulty in picking you up on the system.
Go. That work better?
Okay.
Can you hear better? Okay. Very good.
Thank you. Our first program area is administration and education. These are combined. Within this, we do our basic function of boat registration and titling. We also register as a sideline guide and outfitters. We have about 1,000 of those. Ocean charter boats, and this is where we house our boating safety education program, as well as the abandoned boat program. This was a program instituted in 2003 to clean up boats that are abandoned on the waters of the state. Then other major program areas are marine law enforcement and boating facilities and public access. Within administration, as I mentioned, we have our boat registration titling services. We do this largely through bonded agents. We have businesses such as boat dealers and G.I. Joes, places like that that serve as agents for us around the state. The dimensions on the program there. Outfitter and guide registration, a little over 1,000 outfitters and guides. That stayed fairly constant over the last 10 years. They come and go, but the overall number doesn't change very much. And then about 212 ocean charter boats that we register. One of the things that we do within administration, we do marine event permits. These are permits for boat races and regattas, bass tournaments, and things like that.
Do we have boat races in Oregon?
Hey. Yeah.
Ever been on the Rogue River? Yeah. Have a big race at Grants Pass.
Well, I've been down on the Rogue River, but I haven't been on a boat race on the.
Yes, I
can. I didn't know. Okay.
Right?
Yes, there are.
Boatnik.
I see. Okay.
Pink tie.
Mr. Chair, does that include the crew races that the universities have on the rivers?
These are mostly larger motorized events, hydroplanes, things like that. Occasionally they race at places like Devil's Lake or on the Columbia.
We have hydroplanes.
Small ones.
Yeah.
Different classes. Though.
I mean, I remember seeing Lake Washington, but having that activity in Oregon.
Yeah, we don't have unlimiteds here, but we have the limited races. They're quite popular. They're a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, a lot of people, Mr. Chair, take part in that. And we figure about there's a tenth the flow of rogue and beer on that weekend.
God bless. We think it's a bit more because it might be beer and piss, but we think maybe.
You can strike that. Be okay.
Please continue.
Okay. Also within administration, we do our waterway regulation and rulemaking, establishing regulations and speed limits on waters around the state. We do our boating statewide triennial boating survey within administration, and this is where we house our support services, our business services personnel, and computer infrastructure. Our little snapshot of our boating education program. One of the primary activities these days is the issuance of boater education cards. We're halfway into the implementation of mandatory voter education. This year is the first 45 and under. So far, we've issued over 96,000 voter education cards to people, and it's going quite well. A variety of ways people have to comply, whether it's classroom courses or internet courses, challenge exams. People like the variety of options that they have for complying with that program.
Outstanding. Representative Krieger.
Yeah, Don, when you first started out, there was kind of a period where you could do the course at home. A lot of us got it in, and I believe we received a little card. I could no more tell you what that card is today than the fly. One question is that when you're stopped now by the state police or sheriff, can they hit the little radio and check to see whether you've got one and you just don't have it on you? And how does that read in the statute regarding requiring it to have on your person, like an angling license or a driver's license?
Chairman, Representative Krieger, you do have to have proof of your voter education card. It's a small credit card size card that we issue. For a while, the home study courses were accepted before we got into the mandatory phase in. People that went through that and obtained a certificate, if they've lost it or misplaced it, we probably have a record of that. We can issue a duplicate card for them. They do have to show proof of mandatory education. And I might add that compliance has been outstanding. We have better than 90% compliance with that program. So it's working well.
Mr. Chair, the other 10% gets us back to boat racing again.
Fair enough. Please continue.
See, I have a customer here.
Yeah.
We have, as a part of mandatory voter education, we've been training and bringing on board a number of volunteer instructors that offer those courses in communities around the state. We develop and produce a number of publications to educate and inform the public. We've got quite a bit of information on our website that people can access, where to go, what to do, regulations, all kinds of other information. In fact, we are registering boats online now, too, so we have that online registration as an option for people.
Now, Paul, just to back up a moment, can you take your entire voter education course online and complete the test online now?
Yes, ma'am.
You can. Okay, very good. Thank you.
And that's probably the most popular option that people are availing themselves. We also, within the education area, maintain the information on boating accident investigation and reporting. We have a number of films, correspondence courses, other things that we do here. We coordinate signs and kiosks around the state to provide public information to the public. One of the things that we're working with the Coast Guard right now to do, and we're pretty excited about, is low-power radio stations at places like Newport and Tillamook Bay. We're going to do those as a pilot program this year to give people live information about hazardous bar conditions, when the bar is closed, information like that. And
what program is that under your public information?
It's under our education.
Under voter, and how will you deliver that?
We're going to be co-oping with the Coast Guard. They're going to actually install the radio transmitters at their stations and maintain them. We'll help them with the message and some of that, and then their personnel will actually update the information. But it's a cost-sharing program that we're doing with the Coast Guard.
Outstanding. All right. Please continue.
So those are some of the activities that we do within boating safety education. Then our second major program area is marine law enforcement safety services. Here we operate under contract with 33 County Sheriff as well as the Oregon State Police to provide on-water patrol on the waters of the state. We provide them with the platforms they need to carry out their mission, boats and associated equipment. We train and certify our marine law enforcement officers. We have a two-week basic course, and then we offer a number of additional courses in such specialized things as whitewater operations or drift boat operations, boating under the influence, detection and arrest, and similar types of training.
Sure.
Yes,
Representative. Thank you, and I apologize for being late. I wanted to ask you about the enforcement. What's the line between when you do enforcement versus the Coast Guard? Is it a certain amount of miles off the coast, or who enforces, in near shore?
Chairman, Representative Dingfelder. The Coast Guard is the primary enforcement authority in the ocean. Our officers, for the most part, stay inside the jetties and the bays and rivers. We have concurrent jurisdiction with the Coast Guard on all waters of the state. Coast Guard does have some patrols in the Portland area and on the Columbia River, but their presence is very limited outside of the Pacific and the Columbia River, and so we're the primary enforcement authority on all other state waters.
Representative Krieger.
The State Police, Representative Dingfelder, also work with the Coast Guard by actually being on their boats part-time. If a citizen of the state departs from the port, then we go out to the 200 on an Oregon citizen, but not on a citizen
miles?
Of some other state.
200 miles. Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So these, as I said, we carry out the marine law enforcement program primarily through our contracts with counties as well as the state police. They also play an important part in our education efforts because they are the front line. They meet and greet boaters on the waterways, distribute information to people, answer questions. It's not simply about enforcement. They're also a very important part of our education component in meeting and working with the public. And they do conduct a number of school and other adult water education programs. They do the proctored testing for some of our mandatory education classes where people want to challenge the test. They don't want to go to a class. They have lots of experience. If they want to take the test and be done with it, they can go into the sheriff's office and get that test taken. And then our third and final major program area is our boating facilities program. Here we provide technical and financial assistance to local governments and other agencies throughout the state, working with cities, counties, park districts, port districts, state parks, Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, some of our federal partners, Forest Service, and the Bureau of Land Management, among others, to provide facilities such as ramps, parking, restrooms, docks, and other types of facilities for the convenience and use of the public. We also provide grants for sewage pump-out stations and tie-up docks under a federal program, the Federal Clean Vessel Act program, and another new federal program, the Boating Infrastructure Program, which provides large transient facilities. Types of projects we do. The projects are statewide. They're guided by a six-year facility plan that we do. We just recently updated that plan after a series of workshops and meetings around the state, and it identified over $150 million in additional improvements needed for the next 6 years through 2011. We provide, as I mentioned, technical assistance. We provide engineering and other technical assistance to those local providers that lack the specialized knowledge of ramp construction and that. We have in-house experts that can assist them with that. Very popular program. Leverages a lot of outside funding. We leverage a lot of federal funds with it. as well as local dollars and other sources of money to take our dollars in construction. And I think it's about 3-1. We bring in about $3 for every dollar in state.
Very good. Representative Dingfelder?
Thank you. I wanted to ask you about the source of funding. And I see on your chart here that you show a breakdown of $7 million coming from other funds and $2.5 coming from federal. Are the other funds from your fees, or is that, do you receive any Measure 66 money at all?
Chairman and Dingfelder, no, we don't receive any Measure 66. It's all registration fees, state motorboat fuel tax on the state side, and then the federal funds come either under the Clean Vessel Act or the Voting Infrastructure Grants, or sometimes they're federal funds that come through the Department of Fish and Wildlife as a part of the Sport Fish and Restoration Program. 15% of that money is earmarked for public access. And so we work very closely with our partners at Fish and Wildlife to find projects that are a good fit for them from a perspective of angling access, and a good fit for us in terms of boating access. And that's a 75-25 partnership on those. So it's a good way to leverage our dollars against theirs.
Do you ever, as far as the parks, because many of your facilities are probably in-state parks or in county parks, for instance, do you leverage with, I mean, because Park Service or Parks Department has access to Measure 66 money. So do you use that at all to leverage your dollars or look at cost share with Measure 66?
I would imagine that some of their funding is Measure 66 money. We've had so that kind of in a quick rundown is our three big program areas, which also mirror our limitation areas. Our limitation areas are administration, law enforcement, and facility grants. This gives you a little snapshot of where we've been in terms of growth of registrations. We kind of hit the high point in 1998, and we've been kind of bumping along flat since then. Whether it's, and we've asked people why, and there's no one single reason. Certainly part of it's the economy, a lack of time, vagaries of the fisheries, and you know, whether it's good or not so good. But we've kind of bumped along at that level since 1998. Part of this, we did, there was an increase approved in the last session. We anticipated there'd be some fall off with that fee increase, and in fact, we've seen a little bit. But it's within what we expected based on our revenue projections. So that's where we're at there. To give you a little bit of a perspective of the kinds of customers that we serve, Oregon is a small little state. Make no bones about it. We're not a state full of yachts. You can see here, this is 16 through 20, 12 through 16, and under 12. Clearly, the majority of boats in this state are less than 20 feet in length. We're a small boat state. Most of them are outboard powered, 63% are outboard, 33% inboard outboard. And in terms of a breakdown of float boats, 40% rafts, 20% kayaks, 15% canoes. I'll give you an idea of the kinds of craft that we're looking at in Oregon. And then in terms of use, we do a triennial survey every 3 years, and our total use days, 98, we're just shy of 4 million days of boating activity, and with the drop-off in use as well as drought considerations, we've seen a decline in that. We would anticipate that this might be another rough year as well, with Fern Ridge offline, with the reservoir facing a very uncertain filling future. This could be another tough year in terms of boating. Fishing is accounts for two-thirds of all the boat use. That's why people are out there. For the most part, they're out there fishing. And based on our last survey, this gives you an idea of the most popular waterways. The Columbia and Willamette ranked number one and two, followed by Pacific. And then we've got Rogue River, Lake Billy-Chinook, Sonoma Bay, Ten Mile Lake, Multnomah Channel, and Umpqua River and Coos Bay round out the top 10 in terms of boating use. Okay. Next, we have agency performance measurements to talk about.
And that begins on...
There's no page number, but there's no follows page. The agency's presentation.
Budget revenues, okay.
Yeah, we had originally put them together talking next about expenditures and money, but now we put that further back. So we've got a number of performance measurements. These were developed for the Progress Board. Oregon, we don't have any benchmarks that our performance measurements are linked to in terms of the Progress Board. Our first one is in the area of boating safety, dealing with marine law enforcement. And it's a measure of the percent of boats that pass a boating safety inspection.
Hang on a moment here. Members? Susie?
In the in your notebooks in the back pocket, there was a memo which was the agency's response to questions from the co-chairs on the performance measures, and they've asked that you kind of follow along with the discussion on each of the measures and the questions that were asked and the responses. Do you need a copy, Paul? Correct.
So, in terms of this one, it's the percent of boats that are passing. Our target is 78%. Our 2003 actual was 74.6. So we're just under the target for that. The numbers on this have been fairly consistent since 2000. And marine officers do over 50,000 inspections each year.
Okay, and we were a couple of questions I wanted to ask you, and you don't have it up on that chart, but if you could turn to the chart in the book that reflects performance measure number one, because I have a question in regards to the drop from 79% as your target in 2004, and it drops to 75% in 2004. Why the decline?
Chairman, I'm at a bit of a loss to explain that 4 percentage point drop in that. We need to get back with our LE staff to find out.
Okay.
I can get that response to you.
If you could, I'd appreciate it, and certainly do that through Susie here at the staff in that regard. Actually, it was you moved up very nicely from 2004 to 2004. That's why I found it a bit surprising that you would see that kind of a drop-off. And then I see you anticipating climbing back up again. So,
Mr. Chair? In the response to that question to the co-chairs, they explained that they had based the percentage on increasing over the long term, assuming an annual increase of 1%, and they made an adjustment.
I see. Okay.
And which is probably reflected in the reduction here.
We adjusted our
focus to improving various aspects
impacting the performance measure. Okay, so you're thinking that... Okay.
I think that's the answer right there.
Okay. Answer. One of the questions, and members, you can see this, we wanted to know what comparable data. We wanted to know how we're doing with other states that do the similar type of thing. And your response says that there's not any national or Western states data that you're aware of, but it does allude to the Coast Guard keeps some statistical data, and other states have similar programs to what you do. And so What we'd like to ask you to do is a couple of things on this particular performance measure. And I think it's fine as it is, but let's add into this, comparing this with, do some research over time and find those other states that have a comparable program to what you do. And let's compare Oregon with them in terms of their percentages. And then we talked about perhaps establishing, and you might think about this, how we could do this, establish another measure that gives us the cost per inspection based on your information that you provided us earlier in terms of the total number of boats that are registered and the total number of inspections that you're able to do. So you break down that cost for us. For the future, on performance measure number one, okay. And again, work with Susie to develop those and flesh those things out in the coming weeks as we move forward. Members, any additional questions on performance measure number one? Hearing none, why don't we go on to number two, Paul?
Okay. Number two is the percent of law enforcement contract patrol hours spent on the water. Here we're interested in looking at the actual number of on-water patrol hours versus how many total hours we're contracting for. Obviously, we want presence in the field, and we think it's important to measure and ensure that we're not just buying hours, we're buying actual on-the-water hours. So this is where we're measuring this. In 2004, target was 49%, and the actual was just exceeded that by about 0.5%. So we think we're close. Our goal is 50% as an overall target, and we work very closely with the counties to ensure that they're meeting that goal in their contracts.
Now, whose new standards are those? Is that something we've set as the state? It is.
That's
okay.
Something that we've set as a part of our contracts with them.
I see.
Ensure that as much of the money that we're contracting for is actually buying on water patrol. Now, we recognize there are a number of other factors that come into play with officers. They have training time. They have travel time to and from the waterway. They've got reports to write. They've got a number of other duties, testifying in court and other things that they have to do that eat into their time. But our goal is to get as much on water time out there so that they're where the action is.
That is also, I'm going to ask you to do the same type of comparison research on this particular performance measure with other, any national or other state data about patrol, contract patrol hours on the water. And one of the questions I had because of the answers that you'd provided us in terms of the hours that are available, which we'll actually get to here in performance measure three, but is what do the patrol people do when they're not on the water? Now you've alluded to some of it in terms of there are investigations and there's court time and depending on the circumstances. And I know this is out of your control because you're contracting with other law enforcement agencies to do this. Do they keep these people year round, typically, or do they just hire them for summertime work? How does that work,
Mr. Chairman? It varies depending on the county. Some of our counties are 12-month contracts where they do have full-time people engaged in marine activity. A number of the smaller counties or seasonal counties, it is a seasonal program where they hire somebody on a 4 or 5 month basis. That would be particularly true in some of the eastern Oregon counties where boating is very seasonal in nature. But yeah. In the coastal counties, much of western Oregon are 12 month contracts.
Okay.
Sometimes they will gear up with additional temporary help for the summer season, but in most of those programs, we have at least one person that's considered a full-time Marine deputy.
And I did want to ask you about the number here for 2004. Your target was 49%. You've got 49.48. But if you go ahead to your response to us on page number 3, third paragraph down on page number 3, it seems to indicate to me that your total patrol hours that year were 51,000. And out of that, your actual on the water was 32,000. And then you say that 62% of total patrol hours were spent patrolling waterways. That, I'm confused because your performance measure says contract patrol hours are actually spent on the water. And I would assume those are the same, but the percentages are the difference. Okay, so they are different then.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, they are different because in some instances they will do shore patrol. They will check people at launch ramps and not actually get underway in a marine patrol boat. They'll do their work at ramps or in the marina. So they're not on water hours. They're shore patrol.
Okay, so... All right, so the words were spent patrolling waterways includes being on the shore, the ramp. That makes sense then. All right, that clears that up. Thank you, I appreciate that. Please continue.
Okay. Measure number 3 is the percent of Oregon voters who believe that drinking alcohol while voting is unacceptable. This is a measure of our Voting Under the Influence campaign, as well as the efforts of our officers to educate, apprehend people that are violating Oregon's law. The measure is the boat operators who believe that drinking while voting is unacceptable, and then there's the flip side of that, which is boat passengers who believe that drinking while voting is unacceptable. The 2003 target for operators was 92%. The actual was 90, and for passengers, the target was 58, and the actual was 45. And this information is based on intercept research that's done for us by to gauge people's opinions of whether those campaigns are getting the message out there, people are actually getting the message.
Yes, Representative Schaffler.
How do you, some folks without any campaign or any information education would find it unacceptable, and others who get educated on that would come to believe it's not acceptable. How do you distinguish those? How do you measure this, really?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Schaffler, by going back to the baseline that we've had on this in the past to see if we're moving people's opinion.
Okay.
It's kind of a relative measure, but we're seeing if through these media campaigns and other methods that we're moving the meter, and it would appear that we are gradually changing people's response to that.
Paul, I do have some difficulty with this particular measure, and let me share with you why. Because I'm having trouble understanding what the value of it is. I understand the value in educating individuals to the dangers of boating under the influence, whether you're a passenger or an operator. But the way this... There's not a discernible conclusion here that can be reached, because even though a percentage of Oregon voters who believe that drinking alcohol while boating is unacceptable, that's a survey. What result do we get out of that? Is what we're trying to get at here. So what we were thinking is, while this may be a good internal measure in terms of measure, just like you articulated, what about, why not measuring the number of BUI, boating under the influence, citations that are issued, and then comparing that data perhaps with your boater education program. So in other words, Try to mull this over with you and your staff. What kind of a performance measure could you come up with that would show us the actual number of DUI citations issued, and then how could you relate that to educating people to the dangers of it? So why don't you mull that over and see if we can't come to some reasonable expectation there.
We'll look at that. I think when we're looking at measuring DUI citations, it ends up being more of a workload measure than a performance measure. It's you know, how many tickets are written for that versus a performance thing, but we can look at it and see what we can do to tie it back to education.
Well, the outcome of educating people to the dangers of it there ought to be a discernible result from that. As you increase your educational component, then hopefully you would have less your numbers of people who believe it's unacceptable should go up, and actually they're pretty high. At least in terms of operators, anyway. I'm a little surprised that passengers, of course, you know, I suppose if you're a passenger and you're not driving, it's probably less of an issue for you to think about drinking while on the water. But this tells me that, yeah, people think it's unacceptable, but how does that translate to behavior? So 92% of the, or 90% of the boat operators say, yeah, we think it's unacceptable, but how many of those boat operators that think it's unacceptable actually do it is kind of a better measure, probably. Okay. So just think about how we could make that happen.
Okay.
Oh, and something else that really piqued my interest in your explanation on page number 2 is down under measure, paragraph 3, under measure number 2, where it goes down to... And I know I'm backtracking a little bit, but I forgot to ask you this. Under the paragraph, how was the target established, down on the bottom, the last two sentences, you wanted to change your target due to increased persistence to remove unnecessary barriers and detractors, keeping service providers from increasing their on-water patrol. I really piqued my interest. What are unnecessary barriers and detractors to keep your contract patrol service providers from increasing their on the water patrol?
Mr. Chairman, some of these things are internal things that we run into with various sheriff's departments from time to time, where we're just not getting the kind of performance that we want to see or expect with a program, and sometimes it's management problems, sometimes they're personnel issues, and it's something that we have to try to work through gingerly, if you will, given that the sheriff is an elected official. You know, they manage their people. We're contracting with them for services, and we try to walk a fine line between you know, getting really engaged in their internal management versus being a contracting agency and expecting performance. But we try to work closely with those providers and to overcome those kinds of internal problems and things that result in them being less than stellar. And sometimes it ends up taking personnel changes to
really is that right
to accomplish it? Yeah.
Well, I think that's a very plausible explanation, and I certainly do accept that How do your goal was back on the previous page was to the new standard is to get your contracting agency to spend 50% of the time
at least 50%
on the water.
On the water.
Actually on the water. So what if an agency you're contracting with doesn't get to that? What do you do with them to bring their performance up?
Mr. Chairman, we try to isolate the factors that are causing them to not put that level of effort in. You know, whether it's equipment problems, training problems, or simply personnel problems. And as I said, it's kind of touchy when you're dealing with you know, an elected sheriff and a local government and performance isn't there, but you know, we try to work with them to achieve an improvement in performance. And sometimes it means they have to hire a different person to be the Marine deputy. Some of the seasonal programs in particular, sometimes it's difficult because, finding people that are willing to accept that kind of seasonal work, oftentimes you're not getting the most shining stars, with it. Sometimes they're reserve officers. They're not, full-time commissioned police officers that some of the counties hire. So they come in many different shapes and forms.
Yes.
Do you ever cancel a contract, pull the funding?
Chairman or staff, no. We've not canceled a contract. However, we have, threatened to reduce funding. In some cases, we actually have reduced funding in programs if the performance isn't there. But it's a cooperative program, and we try to work cooperatively with our partners to ensure that they improve where need be. And we do see a turnaround in programs when we can isolate what the problem is.
And your contracts, do you have clauses, I would assume, in your contract that allow you to make those adjustments, I would assume?
Yeah, and we could, worst case scenario, we could cancel a contract.
That's a pretty extreme measure.
Pretty extreme measure, and it's kind of, not the best way to cultivate cooperating partners.
I'm just curious, what's the lowest performing contract that you have in terms of percentage of time spent on the water?
Chairman, I'd have to look. I don't know off.
Could you just, and don't name the agency? But tell us who your lowest is and who your highest is. I'd be curious to know that. It would be an interesting comparison, actually, even amongst your own service provider. And that isn't anything we want you to include in a performance measure, just something, information I think would be helpful to the committee. Thank you. I appreciate that. Members, additional questions of Paul on this issue? Okay. Well, why don't we move forward?
Okay, are we on number four then?
Yes, we are.
Number four is...
Wait a second. You have 3A and 3B, actually, which we've just... I think we felt that that there would be... Well, actually, a couple of questions. On 3B, I think we came to an agreement we'd like to have you consider deleting that. I'm not sure that it's a performance measure of passengers that gives us anything and has any real value for us.
Okay.
But I was curious, why is there no data in 01 and 02 on that particular performance measure?
Target.
Yes, target data. I'm sorry. My apologies for not being clear about that.
Mr. Chair, the agencies weren't required to go back and establish targets for years that they hadn't been tracking the data before.
Okay.
They put these together for the progress board. So where they had data, they filled it in. Where
okay.
they They didn't go back and make it up.
Thank you, Susie. I appreciate that. That's a fair clarification. Thank you. Please continue.
Okay, so we'll delete 3B and moving on to number 4. 4 looks at boating fatalities as a measure both of our efforts in boating safety education and marine law enforcement. And it's the measure is boating fatalities in Oregon as a percent of the national average. We have, in this case, we do have national data that's gathered by the Coast Guard. And so in 2003, the target was 127% of the national average. The actual was 165% of the national average. And I need to explain here that, as I think we have in our response, that Oregon does have a very challenging boating environment with Pacific Ocean, coastal bars, whitewater rivers, and other places that people can get into trouble. And so we're not proud of it, but we do exceed the national average in terms of boating fatalities.
What are the numbers here in 03 that you provided, and thank you for doing that, is the total number of fatalities were 18. That's on page number 4.
Right.
What's the national average then? Would be 12? 11?
These are percentages.
Why don't you do this? The chair and I thought a helpful piece of data you could include on this performance measure would be establishing maybe some historical data on number of fatalities here for Oregon at the same time. And also some historical data on the top three causes. And I appreciate you breaking those down, by the way, because it gives us some sense of what are the issues that boaters are encountering. And I think you're quite right. We do have a unique environment. And it would be interesting to see how we relate to other West Coast or East Coast states, coast states that have challenging environments like we do at the same time. One of the things that I wanted to ask you about was hazardous waters is by far and wide your most difficult issue. It's providing the most fatalities. You had 10 fatalities in 2003. What are you doing to? Do you have anything specifically that targets that? I mean, you clearly have some education component that talks about alcohol, and that's important. And unfortunately, we had 2 deaths as a result of that. But what are you doing in your boater educational? What kind of an informational campaign do you have about hazardous waters? And that seems to me to be our problem here more than anything. What do you do to fix that problem?
Well, Mr. Chairman, a couple of things. One is our life jacket campaigns. I mean, and this is something that we stress over and over and over, is the importance of life jackets. We know that 85% of all boating deaths could be prevented if people were wearing life jackets. So doing everything that we can to educate and inform the public about the importance of life jacket wear is something that's a very key thing for us. Another example, back in 2001, I believe it was, we had 8 fatalities on the Columbia River Bar in the month of August during the Buoy 10 fishery. We had a number of doubles and triple fatalities that took place there. After that, we assembled a task force with the state of Washington, local sheriff, state police, Coast Guard, Coast Guard Auxiliary, and others, to try to target that, and we next year we put together a campaign to really hit that hard with visitor or auxiliaries at the ramps handing out information. We worked with NOAA Fisheries to produce a small chartlet that showed the hazardous areas at the bar.
We beefed up our low-power radio there to provide information to people. We had more of an on-water presence with the Coast Guard and the sheriff's offices. The next year, we had one fatality. It was happened to be right at the beginning of the season. The media was all over it, and for the rest of the season, everything was good down there. Last year, we lost none down there. Coast Guard counts it as a real success story. The number of search and rescue missions that they had to fly down there or to respond to dropped dramatically. All in all, I think it's a small measure of a success story for trying to deal with hazardous waters.
Right.
I mentioned the low-power radio at Newport and Tillamook. I think that's another example of the kind of outreach that we're trying to do to target areas where we know there's a high risk of capsizings and things like that with additional information aimed at people.
It's a great success story, and it kind of brings me back to talking about performance measure number three and your alcohol education program and tying that to a discernible result. Maybe what you ought to consider here, and I didn't talk with Susie about this, but it just occurred to me as you were relating that story. I mean, that really is a good success story, and it is a discernible outcome to a response that you, the agency, formulated to a real problem. So how can we tie those kinds of activities into those kinds of discernible performance measures? So you instituted this special program after that really bad season. You had one fatality the next year, last year none. I mean, that's a pretty good success. So should we maybe tie those kinds of results to your specific outreach programs of that type?
I think we can do some of that with the fatality numbers. The problem with our fatality numbers is that a few accidents really change the scope of that. While we like to take credit when accidents drop, much of what's happening in a boating accident is beyond our direct control. Despite our best efforts to educate, inform, provide officers, and all the rest, sometimes bad things happen, and we can't be there. We're not don't have the omnipresence to prevent those unfortunate accidents. So the accident date is kind of a tricky thing to play with hanging the success of all your programs on some of those. I think from a longer term perspective, though, it is good. If we look back in the 60s, Oregon, we were losing over 40 people a year in boating accidents. We had half the number of boats.
Wow.
In the 70s, we dropped that number down into the 30s. In the 80s, we pulled it down into the 20s. By the 90s, we were down into the teens. In fact, we had a couple of single-digit years, despite this tremendous growth in boating activity. So I think over the long haul, and we can't take credit for all of it because there's other partners out there doing things as well, but I think over the long haul, you have a real success story with reducing accidents and injuries over time.
Yeah, what year did they put the mandatory life jackets on juveniles? Do you know what year that was?
I believe that was 1987. It was Valentine's Day.
We started losing fewer juveniles immediately.
So
right, we've not had any child fatalities in Oregon since that took place.
What we're trying to get at here is measurable results from activities that you guys are involved in that are preventing these things. And think about how you could do that. And maybe the long-term perspective is not a bad idea in terms of showing the maybe by decade and then tie in what you're doing in terms of low power radio stations, those types of expenses, because it does take some money and some effort on the part of your organization to maintain that. How does that help? Again, try to come up with some kind of a measurable performance measure, and I'm not talking about any single one of those things, like handing out literature at the ramp, more of a presence on the water and low-power radio. Maybe inclusive of all those activities as you... I don't know, let's talk about in the future. There's some way, I think, that we can get to a discernible outcome here that is measurable over time. And if something happens, I don't know, maybe you do it by region. I don't know. Let's just talk about it. I think it's got some potential. Okay. Let's go ahead and move on to number five, then. I don't want to delay that by too much.
Number five relates to our mandatory boater education program, the percentage of inspected boaters who are in compliance with that requirement to carry their card. The 2003 target was 75%. As I mentioned earlier, our compliance rate is 90% with that program, and it's the highest compliance rate that we're aware of in any state in the country with that.
Congratulations.
When we set the target, we set it on the based on the highest known state, which was Connecticut. They were aiming at 80%, and we exceeded that.
Outstanding.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Shawford.
How about especially those coastal states and Great Lakes states, where do we compare in fatalities with them? I suppose it would have to be per capita because populations change. We must be doing pretty good if there's zero fatalities.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Schlaffer, you'd have to do it on some normalized basis, like based on, you know, per 100,000 boats or per 10,000 boats or per something to try to, you know,
figure that out.
Be comparing apples and apples.
Must be right up there if you got zero fatalities.
Well, I may have misspoke if you think we've ever had zero fatalities.
Children. It's for children.
Oh,
for
thank you.
Persons under 12. But we can, you know, we can certainly take a run at comparing it with some other states in terms of accident data on a per 100,000 basis.
We don't have to spend a lot of time at it. I'd be curious.
Sure. In that same vein, what do you do in your boater education classes that are different or comparable? What are you doing that gets such a high compliance rate there? What is it that makes us stand out above the other states to get that kind of a high compliance rate? Have you been able to put your finger on what it is?
Mr. Chairman, a combination of creating a very good awareness among people that there is a requirement. And two, I think, is the fact that we've given people lots of options for obtaining their card. And so, as I mentioned, the Internet and other ways that people can comply, the easier we can and more accessible it is for folks, we think that has to do with compliance. Certainly, if you had to line up and take a course from one person and there was a 6-month wait to get into the class, it would be a different story. It'd
certainly be very different. Representative Krieger?
No, we started out with age classes of people. As that goes up, have you seen any difference in compliance rates?
Chairman, Representative Krieger. No, it's been relatively steady.
About with 5-year brackets or so? Or
well, we started out with 20 and under, then 30 and under, then 40 and under, and then we started getting into some large age classes. So this year we broke it at 45. Next year it'll go to 50 and then 60 because we're getting into some large size age classes. But
that'd be kind of interesting.
Actually, a lot of older folks, a lot of our senior citizens and others that aren't required to have it yet have gone ahead and gotten their cards because they're
being advertised. I mean, go to the boat shows. All the dealers have information on it. Whenever you buy a boat, there's information on the course. Hey, you got to do this. So it's they've done a good job of getting the information out that it's required.
And in fact, many dealers offer the classes as a kind of an incentive when people are buying a boat. They will offer also throw in the class.
Right. Okay. Well, I commend you. I think that's a great achievement. Go to measure number six, please.
Number six is a part of our facilities program, and this is a measure of the number of gallons of human waste sewage not deposited in Oregon's waters as a result of facilities, particularly looking at marine pumpouts, marine dump stations, and floating restrooms. Our target was 363,000 gallons, and the actual was 375,000 gallons that have been prevented from going overboard.
Now, do you think that that will? I mean, you've got a pretty strong target for 2005. Is upgrading your facilities going to help you reach that target, or do you think that this drought that we're experiencing is going to actually have a decreased level of activity out there and might actually cause you to miss that target?
I think that's a good point.
Be less people out there, probably.
If there's less people and less use, so
yeah. Well, it's a good performance measure. Let's move on to number 7A. Mm-hmm. Remember, there are four of these, 7A, B, C, and D.
These are all relatively the same, just addressing different components within the facility program. The measure is the percent of, whether it's parking lots, ramps, restrooms, or transient types, that are brought up to standard in the 6-year plan. And the target for parking lots was 9%, the actual was 7. Ramps, the target was 10. Actual was 8. Restrooms, the target was 7. We exceeded that at 10%. And for transient types, the target was 7, and we exceeded that at 9. And so this was measure that we put together for the facility program to try to measure how well we were doing against our 6-year plan. You can see that the targets and the actuals are both relatively modest numbers. That's in large part due to the overwhelming demand that's in the plan relative to the amount of grant dollars that are available to address those needs. So that's why the both measures are relatively small numbers.
That is a question that we had is why the numbers are so low. One of the things that we were curious about is looking back again on your historical data from 2001 forward, looking at target, your 00 and 0102 and then 03, you're at 9%. And then you're back to 0 in 04, and then you're up to 12% in 05, back to 0 in 06, and then 6% in 07. So am I assuming, Paul, that those are not cumulative?
I believe these are biennialized, and that's in part why you see that, because the performance measures are annual, but we're looking at 2 years of each budget cycle here, and perhaps we're not displaying that. Perhaps rather there's a better way to display it, but I believe that's why you see the because it's on a per biennium basis.
Biennialized. In 2002, 2003, and 2004. Well, let's see. Actually, you've got data. for 2003 that's not in our particular book here for parking lots.
Right, we added that down.
Okay, so that's 7%. So the same biennial reason would be why there's no data in 02 or in 04. Okay. So it's not that grants weren't going out. It's just that you just basically lumped them into one particular year. Okay. So the goal is not having a 6-year plan is fine. The goal of 100% compliance isn't realistic in any stretch of the imagination, because there's simply not enough grant dollars available to do it. So then when you say, let's say here in 2003, for parking lots, your target was 9%, and you got 7%, you're, by saying your target was 9% of the universe of parking lots that needed to be upgraded, and that in that particular year, your target was 9%, and you only got to 7% of them. Okay, and so then when you go forward to 2007, where you have a target of 6%, you're saying that target of 6% is 6% of the universe of parking ramps that need to be fixed in 06. That's what you're saying, right? Your target is to get to 6% of those parking lots that need improvement.
In the new plan, our target is 6% of the total universe in the new facility plan.
Something that might be helpful, you don't have to put it in the performance measure, but it might be helpful in helping us understand how big is the universe? How many parking lots, ramps, and restrooms, and transient tie-ups are you trying to get to in your 6-year plan? Is that defined in here anywhere?
Yeah, I believe it's...
Is it?
In the... The number of projects is identified in our responses.
Which page is that, Paul?
Starting on page 6 at the top, the current plan identified needed improvements at 467 parking areas.
Okay, that's right.
And we awarded grants for 20 sites involving parking.
So you just
We've struggled with this one. It's not it's not probably our favorite performance measure, but trying to do something for the progress board on this. This was at the time, I think, our best shot at something for it. I'd probably like a better one if we could come up with one, but I'm not sure what it is.
Well, we just we're struggling with some of the percentages, and I think you've answered our questions there. One of the things we wanted to ask you is how do you prioritize where your grants go here? What's a higher priority? Is it ramps over parking lots? Is it restrooms over parking lots? Restrooms over ramps? Which is your highest priority out of these four?
Mr. Chairman, the statute provides some guidance. It says that our highest priority is for grants to improve water quality, which we take to mean restrooms and floating restrooms and those types of things, or pump-out stations. After that, it's as the need for the facilities appears to the board. The 6-year plan certainly helps to identify the needs, and then there's a variety of factors that come into play as we're getting around to recommending projects to the board. You know, the relative state of what's there or lack of demand, use numbers.
Kind of have to put all that in the mix.
How popular a place is, whether there's matching funds available. There's a host of factors that we try to
play into that,
filter into that, so that we are able to take our dollars and leverage it to the most extent, the greatest extent possible.
So do you put a the statute says basically water quality, so you know that the issues of restrooms kind of has to be number one. I would take it. And then, but when it comes to facilities, and that's kind of parking lots and ramps, and I mean, it's kind of everything else rolled into a ball, isn't it?
Right, it is.
So then what do you decide is the, or do you just take absolutely each case on a case-by-case basis, saying that in some places we've got a ramp, maybe it doesn't need to be upgraded, or maybe it does need to be upgraded, but we need, our problem is parking, or our problems are transient tie-ups and building another dock. Is that kind of how you do it, or do you say, well, out of facilities, we want to concentrate on ramps because we need more ramps? How do you approach that?
We look at all the proposals that are submitted to us by grant applicants, and we don't try to necessarily, you know, play them off of one another or just say, you know, ramps will be our number one priority, and we're just going to focus on ramps. So it really is looking for good projects where you can make a quality investment. The vast majority of our projects go for the rehabilitation and replacement of existing facilities. There are very few new starts. There's a backlog of projects where it's simply ensuring that the public has a safe ramp to launch from that doesn't have a 4-foot hole off the bottom of it.
That'd be a bad thing.
Yeah, that would take priority over a parking lot, let's say. But it's there's a lot of judgment involved in it.
And do you have a review committee that makes those decisions, or how do you do? You do that in-house with staff, I assume.
We have an in-house review by the staff, and they look at the facility plan and our statewide survey of use and a variety of other factors, and they score them, and then the ultimate judgment is made by the Marine Board.
I see. Okay. Okay. Does the board approve individual grants? Then
yes.
They do. Okay. All right. Board approved. So, the largest number of your grants, percentage-wise, goes in for rehabilitation projects, basically. So you're not doing a lot of new projects then? You're just really kind of... Do you have a big maintenance backlog then? I mean, it's not something we've talked about, but...
Well, yes, Mr. Chairman. I'd say that... Well, historically, about 80 to 85% of our projects have gone for the rehabilitation, replacement, and repair of existing facilities, and there have been, you know, relatively few new starts. You know, blank piece of ground where there's no public access, and we're able to put in a new one. A lot of times, it's replacing, you know, something that's already there.
Yeah.
It's just falling apart due to age. Working in the marine environment, it's a challenging environment.
Absolutely.
It's pretty hard on facilities. You know, many things only have about a 20-25 year lifespan. If you get that out of it, you're lucky in many cases, particularly on the coast, you know, with salt environment and storms and everything else.
Florida's coasts get old fast.
Yeah, you do creak when you walk by. I noticed that.
But, you know, docks, boarding posts, things like that are constantly taking a pounding. And,
sure. There's probably a fair amount of maintenance that's necessary there. All right. Okay, why don't we... Any questions on the remainders of these? And I think number 7's it, isn't it? No, we've got 8. 8, 9, and 10. Yeah, okay.
these are customer service targets, if you will. The first, number 8, is looking at the percent of voters that rate our customer service as good to excellent. We do this by asking customers how they rate that. Our 2002 target was 81%, and the actual was 81%. Number 9 looks at our website and see how people rate that. The target was 86, and the actual was 82. And then the last is a measure of our publications, rated as good to excellent. The target was 70, and the actual was 70.
Okay.
These are based on our triennial survey where voters are actually providing their response.
Very good. And, members, any questions of these?
No.
Okay. We and thanks for providing a couple of answers in your response to us here on page 8, last couple of paragraphs. We asked for two more performance measures that indicate they have to do with the timelines in awarding grants. From the time of one performance measure from the time of application to notification to the grantee. And then also providing a measure that indicates the timeliness of payment upon the receipt of an invoice to grants. Now, your grant money, it pretty much all comes from your fees, and you do have some federal grant money that's available too at the same time. So how do you allocate what is... are you able to shift funds to some extent from one category to the other to say, yeah, you know, this year we'd like to put, we have more money available, we'd like to put more in facilities, that type of thing, or are you pretty rigid on how you can do that?
Well, Mr. Chairman, within the constraints of the agency budget, we don't really have the luxury of shifting too much from enforcement to facilities. Those categories are pretty well set. Within the facilities area, we can do some creative juggling between federal funds and other funds on the amount of match on a project, for example. Some of these CVA projects and other things, we're able to put more federal funds in, and then, you know, back out other funds that can then be used for projects where we don't have an earmark on them. We have some of that. Generally, we approach, because of the nature of construction projects and the timeline that it takes with permitting and construction, we try to award the majority of our grants very early in the biennium. Typically, even the end of June of this year is when we will award the lion's share of our 2005-07 projects. That gives local sponsors the, you know, almost 2 full years to get those projects done during the biennium, and some will need every bit of that time.
Mr. Schaffler.
Thank you. I apologize for trying my hardest to stay away, because it's not the presenter. But the your permit process, do you have to go through the exact same permit process of anybody else who's building anything? There's no
shortcuts for the Marine Board?
Well, in government projects in general, I would think there would be some kind of streamlining there, too. So, and all the costs, everything that go along with it, I just can't believe we couldn't save some money there.
Representative Krieger?
You get fuel tax. How is that identified? If I take my little boat in and I put 5 gallons in the tank, it's rung up as if it was gas tax, unless I claim it. How does that work?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Krieger, you can't claim it anymore as a refund. That was closed when we got the option of transferring motorboat fuel tax from the highway fund to boating programs. It's done based on surveys that are done of boaters, and it's set into the procedure set into statute, and we use a third party, typically Oregon State State University Survey Research Center, and they actually ask people,
how many days do you go boating, how much fuel do you use on a typical day. We know how many boats we have registered, and the rest is some math to come up with a...
It's probably more accurate than the other way.
...than an estimate.
So you do you still pay a refund?
No.
You don't at all? That's all been done away with?
The only refunds are for commercial vessels.
Okay.
But recreational refunds are no longer available. And in response to your question about permitting, yes, we need to get the same permits as anybody else for in-water work, and it has to go through the same kind of reviews. And increasingly, that creates a problem for us in terms of getting projects done in a timely fashion, particularly with in-water work periods that, all of our projects typically involve in-water work. And with the timing of various fisheries runs and so forth, sometimes those windows are very narrow. If you miss one construction season due to contracting problems or that, you've got to wait 12 months before you can get back to work on that again. So it's a challenge.
Sure. I find this amazing. I would assume that, you know, this agency would be a responsible builder, neighbor. Do you ever get appealed? Do your plans ever get appealed? And have you ever went to LUBA or anything like that? Has that ever happened to you, your agency?
Chairman Representative Swofford, no, we've never had to go to LUBA.
Uh-huh.
Typically, we are not the owner of any projects. They're local governments, Probably the biggest challenge for us are some of the reviews done by NOAA Fisheries over, you know, salmon habitat and that type of thing. On occasion, we do have to mitigate for projects that are being done in the waterway. We'll have to, do some other enhancement work in order to offset what we're doing. But we work away at that.
I'm just going to affirm it, Mr. Chair. It's just government making government work. This is mad for me. Forgive me.
It's perfectly appropriate comment.
It's extremely. We haven't got enough money to do a million things, and we're doing this. Forgive me, but it's very frustrating.
It's a process. Okay, why don't we move to priorities?
Okay. I've listed up here, and I believe you have it in your materials, our prioritization.
And members, if you want to turn to your fold-out and go to the next to last page, and it'll mirror what Paul's got up on the board there.
What we have done, and we've color-coded this to reflect the limitations that we're working around. So the green is Program Unit 1, our administration education. Program Unit 2 is our law enforcement in red. And Program Unit 3 is our facilities limitation, which is in blue or purple. We followed the basic statutory framework for our funds in setting these priorities. Our statutes provide that after the cost of administration, the board will fund law enforcement, and that funds remaining after law enforcement shall be used for facility grants. And so that is the basic statutory construction that we've worked from in setting these priorities for you. We've included as number one registration. This is the basic cost of doing business. Followed by administration, which is everything else that's not registration. We've then put marine law enforcement, administration, and law enforcement contracts as third and fourth. These could be rearranged. I think it's a discussion we had earlier, but you know, whether you pay to administer the contracts and then have the contracts, or have the contracts and then pay for the administration of the contracts, there's nothing sacred about the order of those. Number five is our boating education program. Number six is abandoned boats, and there's nothing particularly magic about that. It's a new program.
And this last year, you were actually...
We didn't spend any
you
money.
You didn't spend any money in it. And if for some reason you don't spend any money in it this particular cycle either, that money just basically stays in facility grants, correct?
Yeah, it comes forward.
Okay.
We can use it for facility grants. And then seven and eight, we have facilities administration and facilities grants. And once again, like law enforcement, you know, whether the grants come in front of administration or you have the... There's nothing particularly magic about the order of those. I think the big picture is that following the statutory scheme, after the cost of administration, we fund law enforcement followed by facilities.
I would probably it's an issue of semantics, frankly, because you are not a general fund agency.
Yeah.
And members, you're welcome to look at the 10% reduction, which is basically just contracts for construction facilities. I understand that, but if it were me and you were going to have to make some reductions for whatever reason, you're not going to have to, in my opinion, but if it were, I would rather keep facility grants going out there and reduce your administrative overhead for facility administration. But again, it's semantics overall. But that would be my vote, frankly. Well, okay. Anything else, Paul, there you have? Finish up your presentation.
I think you stole my thunder on the...
I did. My apologies. Sorry.
But for the sake of doing that, that's where we would make our reductions would be in the facilities program, our largest discretionary program. And for ease of keeping it simple, that's the way we did it.
Okay. Is that pretty much it, then?
That's pretty much it, unless you want to talk about anything else. We didn't get into any of our revenues or expenditures today, but...
We'll be doing that in Phase 2,
right.
And it sounds like very soon, actually. Members, as you know, on Friday, we're all supposed to be in training in full ways and means, all members of subcommittees and the full committee, on what to expect, kind of the direction that the co-chairs are headed for Phase 2 and for Phase 3, and it appears that there is some discussion about the Marine Board perhaps being our first victim, our first opportunity to work a budget.
This Friday?
No. The training will be this Friday, but we will not...
What time is that training? Do you remember?
I don't know. I don't know.
It's at your regular full committee time.
That'd be 8:30 then. Or no.
9.
Yeah. We'll have floor at 8:30 probably.
And we're all expected to come?
Yes.
I have my other committee. And
well?
Should I skip it?
I would, yeah.
I'll talk
I bet they
have
a total judiciary either. I bet you I've got a judiciary.
I bet they probably haven't either. And I hope I didn't speak out of turn, but just to give you the heads up. At any rate, we may be revisiting the Marine Board here very shortly to actually work on the budget in Phase 2.
All right.
So it'll be fresh in our minds. Susie, I believe this is our last budget out of this committee in terms of Phase 1.
Yes. I don't think there's anything
Anne Marie's in this schedule tomorrow?
No idea. I know we'll find out.
Information.
There is.
Oh, yeah. We have tomorrow, members, we have the Elliott State Forest cost-benefit meeting. It's an informational meeting. I encourage you to be, and you should have all gotten a copy,
yeah.
I think,
yeah.
of that.
I'm on my way to the penalty.
You are. Oh, that's right. You have judiciary meetings out
in
the Capitol for a bit. Okay. Well, Paul, thank you very much and your staff, and please do continue to mull over and work with Susie on some of the performance measure questions we have to see how we can put those together and perhaps help us understand better what you do. Thank you very much, and members, appreciate it. And with that, we are adjourned.
Good evening.